You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
Well, it's not early. But joining me is the All Marine Radio head chef, that is P. Kimball Holmes from Grand Forks, North Dakota. Colleen said to say hi. She's got a brand
Colleen.
She's got a brand new set of acrylic nails that are going to get damaged before the prom she's supposed to go to tomorrow. And then I'm going to be right again. Yeah, I love when that happens. Yeah, why are we doing
You're always right, Mac.
Why are we doing this on Thursday? I'm not even a girl, and I know this shit, right? Oh, Dad. Dad. I'm like, whatever. Get out of my car. Get out of my truck. So, anyway.
Run alongside.
No. She had to go to the nail place.
Oh. Well, good.
Yeah.
So. You're a good daddy.
Why? I didn't pay for it. She's working. She could pay for that stuff.
Yeah, especially that stuff.
Yeah, flipping burgers, man. Flipping burgers.
Yeah, that's what she should be doing.
Yeah, come on, man. That's how you grow up. What about, although all her friends' parents have bought them new cars, and they're like...
Oh, no.
Yeah, they're like, they just turned 16. They get a new car. Huh?
Do you remember your first car?
Yes. Mine was a night. Okay, so I started driving when I was 16, so it would have been 1973 or 4. When I was a junior in high school. So it probably been 74 or 75. They were not in any hurry to give me my driver's license. So anyway, so I bummed rides for a while. My first car that I drove was this is 1974, maybe 75.
Yeah.
So it was a 1953 Ford Mainline. All right. You can go ahead.
Nice.
You can go ahead and look that up, right? So the Mainline, let me tell you what the Mainline was. The Mainline was the most basic version of that car. Okay. So it didn't have a clock. Yeah. It did not have a clock. It did not have a radio. It did not have a cigarette lighter. Right? It was my grandfather's car, and then he gave it to my mom. And my mom and dad. So my dad used to drive it, but since he was gone all the time, right? They're like, hey, well, if you learn how to drive a stick, you could drive the Ford. So I said, well, okay. So the passenger door used to fly open when you would turn left, right?
Yes.
Which was good when you had a girl in the car because she would sit in the middle. You would say, hey, you need to sit in the middle, not near that door, because it'll fly open. What? Yeah, watch this. And then you turn left. But you make sure you turn like pretty sharp so the door actually does fly open. And it was three in the tree. And it was built like a tank, man. That thing had bumpers on it.
Oh,
from hell, man. They named the bumper after that, because if you went and bump with that thing, it was going bump. So, yeah, look it up.
Well, back then, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, back then they made cars of steel. not fiberglass and eighth inch aluminum.
Yeah, it was, and then we had it was black, I think, or midnight blue was the original color. But after 25 years, you know,
yeah,
it oxidizes a little bit. There's a little bit of surface rust. So we got it painted a dark green, and it looked like it was a flat green, and it did not look great. But you know what? That was my first car. What was your first car?
It didn't matter. My first car was a 52 Plymouth, weighed about, I don't know, 10,000 pounds. Not really, but it was a heavy car like yours. I had three on the trees. I couldn't, I learned how to drive in my dad's automatic.
What model? What
got my driver's
53
license.
Plymouth what?
Just 53 Plymouth, two-door, a cruiser. It was, I have no idea what it was.
Let me give you some choices. This is a 53 Plymouth Cranbrook. This is a 53
yeah.
Plymouth Belvedere.
There you go.
Oh, you had the Belvedere? It was the same. It looks the exact same as the mainline, man.
Well, the thing is.
The back seat?
I had to wait.
The back seat of the Ford mainline, it was like a queen size bed.
Yes, exactly. It was beautiful. And, but I had, I couldn't get, I was, got my license at 16, but I was in and ready to get my car. And I was, driving the tow motor, the forklift in the concrete block yard. And I backed into some old couple coming around the corner, and I had the forklift had two just poured lentils, beams, concrete beams, and they went everywhere. They fell off the forklift, smashed the front of the car, and Dad says, "You're not driving this summer."
Yeah, what the hell were you thinking about? Were you listening to your iPhone or something like that?
No, no. Come on, man. This is 1960.
Yeah, so what excuse? You just had your head up your ass?
Yeah, pretty much. I was talking to two of the guys in the yard, and I wasn't looking where I was just backing up.
Well, that's always helpful when you're driving a forklift with concrete like things on it.
Yeah, and so I got no car that summer, but the next summer I got my car, and I don't think it went over 55. I think he had a governor on it. It was slow. It was a car, and I don't know what color it was. It's kind of a faded out blue, very faded out blue. But it got me around, and I loved it. It held a lot of people, and the trunk was big, so you could go to the drive-in with about four or five friends in your trunk, your date and you, and then you get in the movie and everybody you pile out and fill up the back seat and the front seat.
You know, one of my friends used to, we'd go to the movie, right? It was like, it'd be like $5 a carload. And so he would want to get in the trunk. So he would, and then he wouldn't pay. He wouldn't pay, and then, he wouldn't buy any food. Like, hey, you guys paid a buck, I'll buy the popcorn. None of that. So, we're going to the movie one night, and I don't know, there's four or five of us, and he's in the back seat, and, you know, the beautiful thing about the driving, you go with your friends, you could talk shit the whole movie, you could laugh, you could laugh and yell, there was other people that went there that you met. Right, so maybe some friends. So you're walking around the drive-in anyway. Well, you could have a good time. You wasn't sitting in the theater like everybody had to be quiet. So we're going to go have a good time. And so I stop about 100 meters before, like, the booth. So you'd turn off the street, right, and you drive down the road to the booth that you paid at and you went in. So I told my friends before the freeloader got in the trunk, I said, hey, look, when we get to when we turn off the street, I'm going to say, okay, everybody get your money out, and I'm going to stop the car. And then one of my friends, you're going to say, all right, hold on, I got to get my money out, and you're going to get out of the car. Okay? You're going to go up to the booth, and you're going to tell the guy, make them open the trunk. Okay? And so. So, everybody's like, all right, we got our money, we're good. All right. And then we're like, hey, you good back there? Yeah, I'm good. And there's like all my baseball equipment is in the back. He's laying on it and shit. So we go up to the booth and I'm like, hey, how's it going? The guy's like, hey, good. He goes, what movie? Right? Because there was two screens. We want to go see James Bond, whatever. All right. Can you open your trunk? And I said, what for? And he said, I just want to see inside your trunk. I said, well, there's nothing only in my baseball stuff. He said, well, if you would, just please open it. So I shut the car off. I get out. And the guy comes back. We open it. There's my dumbass friend laying in the back seat. And the guy looks at him and goes, what are you doing in there? And he's like, oh. He goes, hey, you have to get out. You have to get out. You have to pay extra money. So we were laughed our asses off. So that served him right. Served him right.
Yep. Yeah.
He went on to go to jail for robbing banks, though, later in his life. So got involved with
too bad.
Yeah, got involved with drugs and stuff like that. So yeah, wasn't a good omen. So
Yeah.
All right. So what of all the cars you've ever owned, what's the favorite car you've ever owned?
The favorite car I ever owned was my first car I bought in California when I finished high school at Palo Alto. And it was a 1960 TR3, a Triumph. A Triumph, and I paid...
convertible, no doubt.
Convertible, no doubt. And there were a bunch of us. This group I used to run with had TR3s, and one guy had a TR4. I think there were three of us or four of us. And mine cost, $600? $600 or $700. And it had, three on the floor. And reversed, you had to be just stop dead because it wasn't synchronized. And
exactly.
And you had to be careful. Not to throw it in there and blow out.
Everybody within 100 yards, when you grinded the gears like that, they would.
Oh, yeah.
So this is what, 1963?
No. It was 1960.
Triumph.
Yeah, and the doors were cut away, you know. I mean, it looked like your elbow would drag on the asphalt.
I know it was low, super low. I wanted one of those cars, like in the worst way. The TR4 was like the sporty modern version, right? The TR3 it was the classic British roadster with the big, you know, the big fender, the big sweeping fender, you know, wheel wells.
And
the door was cut way low, like Kim's talking about.
Yeah.
You stick your hand out of the door and drop it, you would touch the ground.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But I got that car, I guess, in January of 64, and somebody had gone to Tijuana to get their cars upholstered.
Everybody did that.
And spring break, we took all our cars down to Tijuana. We did a road trip. And, but we were told, bring your own thread.
What?
And because they used cheap thread that kind of broke apart. So we went to an upholstery shop, got our own thread. We knew what kind of leather tuck and roll we were going to get.
What the?
And then they said, make sure, that somebody stays with the cars while they're working on them, and the rest of you can go run around Tijuana.
Right.
And so we said, sure, okay. So we took our shifts of staying by because and the rolls, you know, we gave them the thread, picked out our leather, and normally they would stuff cotton batting in the roll.
Right.
But if you weren't there, they'd put newspapers or straw,
small animals, whatever would fit.
little rodents.
Exactly.
But yeah, and so, but boy, if you watched over them and you tipped them, you know, I think it cost me like for the whole car about $50.
Come on.
To the two front seats. And then the two jump seats in the back, it was cheap. It was dirt cheap. And then the rest of us ran around Tijuana and had a blast. Went to a strip club called the Blue Fox, which was notorious for its shows. And that's all I'm going to say. And eventually, I think in the late 60s, it burned down. But it was a very infamous club. But, yeah, we went down there and got our cars upholstered. And, man, when we came back after spring break, we were styling.
Wow. Back in the day. Back in the day. I was talking to I went to a Memorial Day event down on Balboa Island in Newport Beach.
Yes.
And I met a guy named Ellis. Ellis is 93. Born in Palestine, not Palestine like Ohio or anything like that. Born in like Palestine.
The Palestine.
Yeah, and after enlisted in the British Army when it occupied Palestine in the 40s, and then came to the United States, went to school at Baylor, and he comes to the United States. He comes out to California in the 50s. I said, "What brought you to California?" He said, "A woman." That's always the case, right? So he winds up starting a newspaper in Toluca Lake. Now Toluca Lake is like this kind of Hollywood star refuge place, right? Toluca Lake. So he sells the newspaper and then he comes to Newport Beach. And somebody says, "Hey, you can get a cheap house out there on Balboa Island." Those houses are worth, I don't know how many millions of dollars today. But he and so we were talking about we started talking about hitchhiking. And he said, "Oh, I used to hitchhike all over this country." And, it made me think of you. So anyway, my favorite car, I don't know, you know, the truck I have now, I've grown to love. The Ford mainline, although has a sentimental place in my heart because I always had so much fun with it. I took it down to college in San Diego and I drove it from Sacramento down to San Diego. I got it over the grapevine, right? I didn't know if it would make it up that hill, that mountain. And so, but it did. Had it in San Diego, and then somebody tried to steal it while I was on vacation. I was on, like, Easter break or something. I was home for a week or so, and it got impounded. And, you know, those impound lots, those bastards, right, they're like, "Oh, yeah, it's $75 a day." Well, I was gone for, like, 10 days, right? And so it's like, "Oh, yeah, that'll
Jeez.
Be like, yeah, that'll be like $530. I mean, like, yeah, who's got that? And so I had to sign the papers, and they sold it for auction. I started getting parking tickets 2 years later in Long Beach, and they were coming to me. And so I looked the guy's phone number up, and I called him, and I said, "Hey, could I buy that thing back from you?" And this is now in 1985. The guy's like,
holy mackerel.
The guy's like, yeah, come and get it. So my roommate in college and I, we go get it.
Yeah.
And we towed it to Camp Pendleton. And so I had it until it started. We had John, our first child. And then it started, you know, spending, I won't say too much money because I never spent a lot on it, but, you know, you got to go find a new generator. You got to go find a new fuel pump, like, you know, and they have to work. So anyhow, then I wound up selling it a second time, so never seen it since. But the truck I have now is a Nissan Frontier, and I bought it in 2010 before I went to Afghanistan. Because I was going to have to run a car for a couple months. It was going to be like, I don't know how much money. It's going to be not a small amount of money. And I thought, well, what the hell? If I'm going to spend that, I might as well pay it on a car. So I bought a car, drove it out here. Then I went to Afghanistan. Patrick drove it for a year. And, but let me tell you, I've had zero maintenance issues with that thing. And it rides, like, I just went up to Nevada a couple weeks ago, and so went through Las Vegas. And let me just tell you, the speed limit is not really observed between the eastern perimeter of Los Angeles and the city limit of Las Vegas. Okay.
Yeah. It's Jersey rules.
Yeah.
How fast does your car go?
Yeah, it's routinely violated. And so, so my truck will go 95 miles an hour, and you will feel like you're going 60. You'll look down and go, how fast
are we going? That's a good ride.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit attached to it. And it's got a couple cracks in the windshield, and people say, why don't you get those cracks fixed? And I say, because it's a truck. It's supposed to have a cracked windshield. And they look at me like, what? I'm like, yeah, don't you know what a truck is? Now, I've got a buddy in Montana. He bought a truck for $80,000.
Yeah.
The truck will give you an enema while you're driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For 80 grand and better.
Better, right? So, yeah, it'll give you an enema. So, it knows the difference between your enema and your wife's enema because you assign the key fobs different identities. So with like your key fob, when you unlock it, the seat adjusts, the enema fills with whatever temperature water you like. If you like you like your enema shaken or stirred, it does that too, right? So all of that stuff it does. What do you get for $80,000? So, but it does that, and but he's not gonna have a cracked windshield. So it can't be like a real legit truck. He just said it wasn't 80 grand. It was 75 grand. So I think of all the cars that I've owned, we also had one in Grand Forks, a Yukon XL Denali. It was beautiful.
Yes.
It had an awesome stereo. I tend to buy car stereos and then the vehicle that goes with it. Okay, so if I like the car stereo, if it's really good, it sounds good to me, then I buy whatever car goes with that. So that's how I really do it. And so, but the Denali was fun because a lot of memories of Colleen being in that car. It had a DVD player, right? So whenever we go, the boys would be playing hockey or whatever. You know, put that in. Colleen would be watching that in her seat when she was a little kid. And then, you know, you'd look back. And you know how kids can, like, they fall half out of the seat while they're asleep and their neck is all tweaked, but they can stay like that forever?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They're down.
Exactly. So, anyhow, here's a text message. How do they afford those kind of cars in high school? Their parents buy them. Yeah, and
their parents pay for the insurance.
Yeah. Yeah, we
and probably give them gas money.
Of course, man. We had a little, you know, we you know, with all of our kids, I mean, they bought their own cars. You know, and
me too.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, when do you start learning the value of money? You know what I find interesting? All this, everybody who took out student loans, nobody's going to pay them back now. Is that
really?
Is that the deal now? I don't know. You don't have to pay back your student loans. What a great deal!
When did that come down?
Well, I mean, it's
good for them.
It's like, first of all, you don't have to go to college. You make that decision,
well,
right? You could go to a lot of different places. You can do it on the cheap, or you can really spend a lot of money. Whose decision is that? That would be your fucking decision. Okay, so now everybody who didn't go to college gets to pay for your 4-year drunk? That's how this works?
I like the way they did it in Switzerland.
How they do it?
When you finished high school,
yeah.
First of all, you had to do military service, man or woman.
We both like that.
Before you were 21 or something like that, but you had to make a choice. You took a test.
Uh-oh.
And you got 2 chances at the test. If you passed it, you could go to the university. If you failed, you had to go to a trade school. It didn't matter. But you had to get a gig. And that was your choice. And then, but you had to do a year and a half of military service. And then every year you had to go to summer camp for 2 years until you were 52 years old. You know, military, and it's a militia, so you kept your weapon at home, and every once in a while I'd be down off the mountain on a Sunday taking the train into Interlaken or Bern, and you'd see these guys, men and women, on bicycles or motor scooters with their machine guns across their back,
of course,
going to target practice. but that's how they work it in Switzerland.
So they would tell you if you weren't smart enough to go to college, they would tell you that. Sorry, bro, you're going. You got to become a welder because you're too stupid.
You could be a welder, you could be a carpenter, you could be a pharmacist. That's 2 years school to go to pharmacy school.
Yeah, I don't think you could be a pharmacist. That's school, man. If you can't get into college, you can't be a pharmacist. We're going to have you give people drugs and then have what happened.
You can get any drugs.
In It's a Wonderful Life, when Mr. Gower gives the wrong drug to that kid and George...
No.
And then he smacks George in his bad ear.
I'm sure you had to pass the test for that too. But I found it interesting. But you had to have a gig or go to school.
No, not in this country. Not this country. You get to decide, right? You want to go to college? I'm going to college. Yeah, but you're really kind of stupid. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I'm going. Then you get accepted, and then you take out a whole bunch of loans, and you say, yeah, I don't want to pay that shit. To me, mind blowing. It's like, at what point is anybody responsible for anything in this country anymore?
Yeah. It looks like they're not going to be responsible.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. I won't go off on that little rant.
Thank you.
But I could.
Yeah, we both could.
All right. Let's talk about food.
There you go. Now, we did stuffed portobellos last week. We're getting it in grilling season. It was 85 degrees in Grand Forks, downtown Grand Forks, North Dakota yesterday.
Hello.
At 85 above zero. Imagine that. It's the last day of May. It's going to be about in the mid-70s today.
That's awesome.
And It's nice. Really nice weather. Sun's out for the next week. And the grill's going to be going. And
hey, I want to ask you a flood question, because there's all kinds of news about flooding. Your experience, how long does it take an area that gets hit by a natural disaster like a flood, or I see in videotape of the Gulf Coast, it got hammered a year ago, and it's empty.
Hurricanes and tornadoes.
Yeah. So when a community gets hammered like that, you have experience. How long does it take a community to come back from that?
8 to 10 years.
Yeah. Most people when they hear that are incredibly surprised by that.
And so were we.
Yeah.
We were stunned. What do you mean 8 to 10 years? What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, we're North Dakota people. We're gonna roll up our sleeves and get after this.
Well, I found a spot that the water was at the doorstep but didn't go inside, and it was built on a concrete slab down by Riddell's, where we first met.
Right.
And I had the restaurant open 7 weeks after the flood.
Right.
And that was a rarity, because there were only 3 or 4 restaurants open at that time after the flood of 120-some restaurants. So,
when we talk about coming back, we're talking about the business district comes back. And let me tell you one of the shockers, right? There is no free money. Like, what's going to happen?
Oh, no.
Right. Everybody thinks that, like, well, all this federal aid, right? Well, here's what happens. FEMA shows up, and they have people that will give you loans, right?
Yes.
Right. And so you can take out a FEMA loan. Now, you can.
Yeah.
So.
Low interest.
Yeah. Hello. And so you get a disaster loan. Well, but there's this, I think a lot of times, because it doesn't happen but once in a lifetime to most people, right, there's an expectation like, well, the federal government's going to come and, you know, and there's going to be money. No, there's nobody giving anybody money in all of this. Nobody. And people look like, well, how does this work then? Well, you go into debt or you, and then there's people, right, Kim, older people in town.
Yes.
What they have to decide is, how do I, and there's a whole area of where I used to live, where Kim lives now, Grand Forks, North Dakota, that was built right behind the levee. It was in a lower part of town. They built the levee, which opened up, right? And then the levee got certified 40 years ago by the Army Corps of Engineers, and then they were able to sell real estate in this lower part of the city. It was an area known as Lincoln Park. And when the dike gave way, all those homes flooded. Now, they tended to be owned by older people. And so
400 homes.
400 homes in a community. And they so those people are now retired. They're on fixed income, and they've got zero for a mortgage. What happens to them? They're going to build another home? They didn't go buy another home for $180,000 someplace, if they could find that. And so there's this ripple through the region is huge. People who just pack up and they have to go someplace else, maybe go live with their children, because they simply
start all over. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they got to go someplace where they can find a home that they can afford on a fixed income, where they had no payment before. So there's just all this ripple through, you know, there's flooding right now. I just saw a levee break in Arkansas. You know, there's the damage from a year ago from the hurricanes and the tornadoes. And you're just going, holy smokes, man. But I thought I'd tee that up for you because of your experience. And people do say 10 years. And I'll tell you what, in 2007, in the 10-year commemoration of the Grand Forks and East Grand Forks flood of 1997, it was true. The city had come mostly back. The business district had been regenerated. That took time to refurbish buildings and then for businesses to go back down there because everybody says what? Well, who's going to go back downtown? And so there's all these huge questions.
Me.
Right. Kim went back down. Kim was one of the, truth be told, Kim was one of the anchors of the redevelopment of the city. And his restaurant, which brought people downtown every night. And so they did things like, hey, you know, we'll sell you this building for cheap, but you gotta, you know, these are the terms, and a city's trying to reinvent itself, and it's just not easy stuff. FEMA also, the federal government comes in, and they will loan you money, right? Yeah. And they loan you millions and millions of dollars, and then I want to say in probably 2007 or 8, they came back, and so all the infrastructure that you repair, they go look at.
Yeah.
They send cameras. Yeah. They send cameras through your sewer to analyze the repairs that you made. And if you spent money on things that were pre-existing or not caused by the flood, right, they claw that money back.
Yeah.
We're not paying for that. We're not paying for that. We're not, and they add it all up, and you better have kept some in reserve because they're taking it back. So it's not – you know, people think there's all this free money. And the federal government will come, and it will help you with infrastructure repair. But you've got to be disciplined about it. You got to do it right. And but it's kind of a horrible experience for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. So.
Beth and I will see the floods or hurricanes on TV. And having been through it, both of us are, like, sick to our stomach thinking about the rebuild for those folks. I mean, it's just so sad, and it's devastating if you've never had it done. All I can say is get whatever disaster insurance you can get it, and pay for it. And I had an insurance guy that wouldn't leave my office until I wrote him a check for this. For Sanders, I wouldn't be talking to you today because I don't know where I'd be, whether I'd be alive or not, if it wasn't for my flood insurance.
You'd be living out of your little Volkswagen Bug.
Well, yeah.
You and Beth.
Hey, Shaft. We'd be living in Shaft.
Exactly. The you'd be on the streets of L.A.
With, I pretty much would.
Yeah, warm weather. Sleeping under an overpass, you and Beth, she would not be happy with you. No, she'd be in Northwood. You'd be there you'd be there by your.
I'd be running some cafe in Northwood for sure.
No,
both of us would be.
Yeah, but
and
it's
living in her parents' house.
Yeah, it's
where we lived for 7 weeks after the flood until we could get back down town. Now, I had flood insurance.
Right.
I did.
Let's talk about flood insurance. Flood insurance is a federal program, and I want to say, how much was it for you a year?
For me, at the new Sanders, it was like $5,000 a year. And then when the flood wall got built, it got knocked down to about a little under $2,000 a year after the 10 years later. But I didn't come back downtown until, 3 years after the flood. 2000 is when I came back downtown. July is when I opened that restaurant downtown. But, they had to build the infrastructure.
Right. But here's the deal. So people look at all of that and they say, come on, I got something better to do on an annual basis with $5,000, right?
Yeah, well, try and rebuild a building.
No, you know what I say? Look, when was the last time we had a flood? 1960-whatever? Come on.
Yeah, 60. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what are the odds? And so people don't do it. And if you don't do it, you get nothing. And so it's...
And you look at the floods and the... tornadoes that are going through this country now and the hurricanes in the last 10 years, you damn well better get some kind of disaster insurance wherever you live, and just plan it in your budget, because nothing is more, it's still a terrible thing to have your home disappear in a tornado. But if you don't have insurance, then you're SOL, baby. And so, you know, that's all I can say.
Yeah, no,
but
you...
Boy, it sure is disheartening, isn't it?
Right. To see this. And then there's all kinds of things that happen once, you know, on the backside of it. First of all, the loans you take out they originate with FEMA, right? You do the paperwork, FEMA.
Yep.
FEMA has a loan, and then they're bundled by FEMA and they're sold in the secondary market. Now, those loans, right? Have to be subordinated by the lender in order for you to take out like a second mortgage. So you take out a loan, and let's just say that repairs the flood damage on your house. Now, 5 years later, you're still in the process of paying that off, but you want to remodel your kitchen, you know, because you're getting on your feet again. And you go to take the loan, you make the loan, and they say, yeah, well, based on that loan, we can't loan you any money until they agree to subordinate their loan, blah, 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 blah. And the note holder's like, or the consumer is like, what? What are you talking about? So they call up the bank that's bought this, and what they got was this. Yeah, we're not subordinating anything. If you want to pay our fee, well, how much is that? It's $1,200. Then we'll support. What? And then it's like, then what you get is their flood rage comes out. And I used to I used to say this on my show in North Dakota. There's no hate like flood hate. So,
oh boy,
yeah. You want to talk about get people pissed off? Talk to people to this day in Grand Forks about who got their electricity turned on first, who got water first, and then get out of the way, because they'll tell you stories who got offered what money in buyouts and why there was differences.
Yeah.
Oh, girlfriend, you do not even want to go there. So
yeah, that's anyway, true.
It's rough. Kim used to get shit on a regular basis. So here's the deal.
Oh.
He used to be the whipping boy. The city floods, and downtown for both cities is on the river, right? I mean, grew up, right? It's a river city, right? And so Kim's restaurant is the joint downtown, brings people down there every night. So now they're looking like, well, people are saying, don't rebuild downtown. Nobody's going to go back down there, blah, blah, blah. And the city council says, no, we got to make downtown a jewel. We got to redevelop downtown, right? We can't lose our downtown. And so, you know, Kim is identified as his restaurant's got to go back there. And when we make that deal, then we can use that to leverage other businesses and say, look, there's going to be traffic. We're going to have a city square. It's going to be beautiful. We'll have events, blah, 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 blah. So they take the building that Kim, they sell Kim a building for cheap. And oh my God, we'd be doing shows.
Shit hit the fan. Oh,
people would call up and say, yeah, you got that building for free, Holmes. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh my God, we would do flood hate radio. And
yeah, let me explain to your listeners how this went down.
It was awful.
The city, there was a city center mall, a covered mall. They covered a street. Dumbest thing the city ever did.
It looked horrific.
By the time the flood hit, there were 13 buildings in this mall. The city owned 10 of them. Okay? So they were selling those buildings. If you wanted to come downtown, they'd sell you the building for a buck. But because everybody pissed and moaned so much, I had to pay $20,000 for my building, which was still a deal. A two-story building about 7,000 square feet of floor, plus a full basement. Now the city remodeled the storefront and the side of the building, and there was a pocket park going in between my building and then the building, because the flood wiped that whole building out. And then I got a $250,000 loan from Grant, $250,000 grant that I did not have to pay back if I stayed there 5 years. They would wipe out the debt. Now, I had to go to the bank and borrow hundreds of thousands of dollars just to build my restaurant. But that wasn't enough for everybody. They were pissing and moaning and calling in radio shows and insulting me to my face on the street and all kinds of stuff. And I'd say, hey, I'm working.
Showbiz, baby.
And do you know what? And plus I got tax breaks. I only had to pay the first year I paid no property tax. Then the second year I paid 50% of the assessed value. And then so on and so forth for 5 years until I had to pay 100%.
Okay, but again.
Everybody who
went back down there got that deal. It wasn't like Kim got singled out.
Yes.
So they were trying to redevelop downtown, right? But Kim successfully achieved
that. But what the screamers and naysayers did not accept was the fact that once all my credits were done and with the tax break, I paid about $8,000 a year in property tax for that building. Now, in 10 years, they got $800,000 back. And by the time I sold the building, they had gotten about $1,500,000 in taxes from me. And that's just from one building. So multiply that times 8 and do the math. And that's how they rebuilt the downtown. But unless you got the incentives, and it was the same for everybody else downtown. Yeah, we got in, but it was the sweat equity that we put in.
But again, it's the only way to get somebody to go back, a business to go back into a disaster area is because, look, much of the money in the city had moved to the south end of the city away from the river. So Kim could have probably found a spot in a strip mall.
Oh, I had offers. Right. I had offers everywhere.
come to daddy.
Come to East Grand Forks. Come to the here and there, and come to Fargo.
When those businesses look to relocate.
I'm here.
But when those businesses look to relocate, you have all kinds of competition from the surrounding region that looks at it and says, hey, man, we can get that lumber yard. We can get that restaurant. We can offer them this. We can offer them that. And so, you're trying to redevelop a community, and all the other communities are looking at that going, hey, man, we can offer them more money quicker. And that's why this stuff is not easy to do. It's not easy to do. And you look at those, and then you hear 10 years, and you're like, wow. That's a long time. How can it take that long? And the truth is,
it did.
10 years, it was every bit of 10 years before those communities were back to normal again. And pretty amazing. Yeah, Kim, man, and we would be talking food, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, somebody called, "Hey, Holmes, Like, really? We're going to do this today? Oh, man. It was.
Seriously, are you going there?
Yeah, are we going to do that? Come on. No, but like I said, but you even, you know, what is it? 19, so it would, it was, it's been 22 years this spring right now that flood happened. Hate does not diminish over time.
No, it doesn't.
If you want to hear people that are, you get pissed, bring up those subjects and watch still how raw those feelings are even after all those years. So,
it's tough. And those people that lost everything, and there are some people that didn't get anything ever. And it was, it's a tragedy.
Right.
Matter where it is.
Yes. And in that city, a fire starts downtown, right? And one of the things that got so much funding because, the national news people, there happened to be a helicopter or somebody filming. I don't know if it was from the water or from the air, but I know that I was in California.
Don't start here.
Right. I know that I was in California and I saw the video. And so that video went out over CNN, over Fox, whatever. And the nation sees it because it must have been a slow news day. So, like all news now, if it's a compelling video, it's getting on TV somehow. It doesn't matter what it is. So anyway, everybody sees that. Well, in order to fight the fire, which they believed had electrical origins, right? The mayor decided on the advice of engineers to shut off the power to the city. Now, the water was being kept out of a lot of homes in the city that were not downtown by sump pumps that were electrically powered. And when she cut the power to the city, all those homes that weren't near the river started filling up because of the hydrostatic pressure of the river coming through the drainage system that was draining into the river. It did not have caps on it. So the river pushed into that and then came up through every place it could come through. And, oh, my gosh, she moved out of town. She's living in Florida now. Yeah. No, tell.
Yeah, she is.
Tell Beth we're tell Beth we're talking about flood hate.
We're talking about flood hate. She's in Florida now. Owens.
Yeah, Pat Owens. And she was the nicest lady.
Oh, 5 foot two of her.
She was the nicest lady, but I mean,
yes,
she
is.
Yeah, the issues, I mean, they divide and it's very, very difficult because those people make hard, hard decisions. And just the decision like this. Okay, we need a new dike, right? And then the decision the city council makes, are we going to rebuild the dike? You know, this is what you would have to do in the Lincoln Park area where there was those 400 homes. And the city council says, nope, we're not doing that. Now, we'll buy those people out, but we're not doing that. Well, what do we do? Where does that leave us? And then the line that the dike took, there's another fight. Does it take Kim's house or do we put it on the other side of the street? And I mean, so it changed people's lives. So all those decisions local people will make, and I mean, and you live with everything that comes out of it. It's a grown up event. It is not and it's not pleasant at all. So all those communities going through that stuff. So anyway, all right. Well, so
our hearts go out to you all.
Yeah, we didn't talk about food at all today.
The next week, I'd like to start our conversation about summer grilling. And everybody out there that's listening, get your questions together, write them down this week, and we're going to talk. I'll answer your questions about grilling, starting out the season, getting your grill ready, and things like that. Is that okay, Mac?
Yeah, it's kind of general. Do you have anything a little bit more specific than that, or just that?
Not right at this moment, but I do want to start talking about grills, and we'll see how that goes.
I grilled last night. I grilled a little salmon, and I left the mushrooms on a little bit too long, and I melted all the cheese out of them, so they were stuffed mushrooms with no cheese on them, but they still tasted pretty good, and the jalapenos were pretty good.
Were they button mushrooms or portobellos?
They were button.
Uh-huh.
They were button.
You can buy very good size button mushrooms that are almost as big as portobellos, and those are, they're cheaper for sure to buy, and they're fun to stuff too.
Yeah, I bought them stuffed at the butcher. And you know, butchers, you know, if you don't go to your local,
you have a good butcher, don't you?
Well, I mean, it's the one at the supermarket, but they know that they got to compete, and so they have, you know, whether it be shish kebabs with, you know, already with a little bit of marinade on it, with vegetables all cut up, which is easy, right? You know, no fuss, no muss. You buy it and you go throw it on the grill and you paste your own sauce on it if you like. And so that's cool. I've got a big green egg and a meat thermometer and I'm ready to learn.
Well, away we go.
You're in the front row, man. The big green egg is the best. It is the best.
It is. It is. I don't have one. I have just a regular gas grill.
Yeah, gas grill.
But your green egg is magnificent. And I ran into Greg Schneider at the Y the other day, and he started talking to ask about you and send his best. And I returned the favor. He started talking about the demos we used to do out there with the big green egg and how you, that one time when you, you sold so many green eggs for him.
Listen, we have a buddy. Kim and I.
He just about gave you that one.
We do Mac Talk, was my radio show, right? And so Kim comes on every Friday. Yeah. So a guy named Greg Schneider, who owns a business called Dakota TV and Appliance, you know, and so I live now in a part of the country where you grill all year round, right? In the southern part of the country, I mean, there is no grilling season. It's all year. But in the northern tier, right, you put your grill away because you can't get to it. Because you're not going to be going outside for very long periods of time. That stretches. And so, you know, it's just part of winterizing your home and getting ready for the winter. And then when spring comes, people, you know, do spring stuff. They go and they open up the lake house. They get the pontoon ready. They get the boat ready. They get ready to go fishing. So April is filled with that kind of stuff. And you get the grill out and you get it ready. So Greg Schneider calls and says, hey, I want Mac to come to his radio show. I'm going to have like a grill weekend, and I want him to come do the show at Dakota TV and Appliance. So I said, all right, I'll bring Kim with me. We'll talk food. We could talk to some of your reps. So Kim had been talking about the big green egg, and I had never seen one. And so the big green egg guy, remember the big green egg guy's there, and we had him on, and we're asking him questions about the green egg. And so – that's on a Friday. I'm coaching high school baseball. This is in May of whatever year, probably 2007 or 8, because I was in Iraq or Afghanistan. So we play, I think, a doubleheader on Saturday, and this thing's going on like Friday and Saturday, and I don't know if it was going on Sunday or not. But anyway, I think late Saturday afternoon, I went down to see. And to show Susan, my ex-wife, who just emailed me, the green egg.
The green egg.
And he told me he'd give me a deal on one. So when I get there, he sees me and he goes, how far does your show go? I said, well, it goes into southern Manitoba up to Winnipeg. It goes out west, maybe, I don't know, halfway through the state. It goes northwest Minnesota into north central Minnesota and into South Dakota. He goes, I've sold more of these things than I've ever sold in my life at one of these events. And I said, so, you know, what's normal? He said, oh, normal, I might sell three or four. I said, well, how many did you sell? He said, I sold 15. He said, do you want one of these things? He said, I'll sell it to you below cost. And, I mean, they retail, the one I have retails for, used to retail for about $750, $800. And I said, well, yes, how much? Right. He said, I'll give it to you for $400 and some odd. And so, so we bought it. And it's awesome. It's the green egg is awesome.
It is.
It's awesome. So anyway, and again, if you have a digital meat thermometer and you got the green egg, you'll never fuck it up again.
No. Never. No matter what you do.
Yeah, it's not fuckable. You can't do it. Right? You turn the.
You can't.
You can't fuck it. You have the Bluetooth thing on your phone. You're watching the meat go up. It'll buzz you when it's like 5 degrees from being ready and say, dinner's about to be served. Poof. And you got the egg shape is really good because you can have fat even drip off a ribeye and there's distance between what would be the flame, right? There might be a foot of distance between that. Right? And so it's like space shuttle technology so that it doesn't lose any heat. You could touch the outside of the egg and, you know, you're not going to feel anything. Yeah. It's space shit. So anyway.
Well, yeah. The ceramic stuff is, that lines inside of the big green egg. Is the same stuff they use on the nose of the space shuttle.
Exactly.
So it holds its heat.
Yeah, most of the time.
It holds its heat. Yeah.
All right. So
very good, man.
That's the green egg story. So yeah, Ohio man, awesome. Good job, man. That's you will not be disappointed. The green egg, and so Kevin was like, he was all excited. So anyway, and then he taught me, and there's a whole line of utensils you can get. The only one I have is the starter, you know, just that angled starter. So, and then the charcoal, you buy the charcoal, and once you're done cooking, right, if you shut the vents, it'll put the fire out, and you reuse the charcoal the next time.
Yes, you can.
Boom, bitches. Yeah. So it makes that charcoal last a little longer, and everybody loves that. So, you know, you're paying yourself back every time you grill.
Yep.
That's what I say. Anyway, you got big plans for the weekend? You watched the NBA Finals last night?
Sure did. I picked the Raptors.
Yeah. They're the Raptors.
That's my team.
That's your team? My Raptors?
Oh, your Raptors, yep. Yeah. And my wife's, too. My wife is locked into the basketball. Very.
Is she? I hardly watch it, but no. Charles Barkley's picking Toronto. So how about that?
Yep. How about this? I love him. Yeah, he is a piece of work.
He's hilarious, man.
He is funny. Him and Shaq on the show, the halftime show and the pregame show are great. Yeah.
No, I mean, they know basketball, and they're funny as hell. And that's, you know, again, at the end of the day, you're entertaining, right? And those guys know
it.
Shaquille O'Neal is hilarious. When you see the stuff that he does, his commercials, I mean, his facial expressions, right? And then they throw that video of him up in L.A., can you dig it, right? And he's just having a good time. He's having a good time. But so, yeah. I don't watch too much. I don't watch too much NBA. Let me just tell you what. If you want to watch a man's event, and not everybody does, but the Stanley Cup Finals, holy shit. Right?
That is the butchest event of all.
Did you watch it the other night? Let me tell you. Sons and I are watching in different parts of the country, and we're texting. Guy who used to be the captain of St. Louis now plays for Boston, and they're playing each other. Right? He's coming down the wall with the puck, right? He gets checked and kind of cross-checked, kind of in the face, not too bad, and he goes to the ice. The guy who cross-checked him, right, skates back to him, and while he's laying on the ice, he cross-checks him again with a stick. He reaches down, bam, and calls him, like, get up, you coward. And I'm like, only in hockey would you see shit like that, okay? Other sports, yeah, they don't allow that. But it's awesome. It's awesome. But they play kind of the same physical style, and it's pretty fun to watch. It was overtime the other night. St. Louis even the series. So you got that going, and you got the Red Sox and the Yankees in the Bronx tonight. So a little bit of hate. A little bit of hate flow in New York City.
I love it when the Yankees and Red Sox play. It's always a great series, and there is no love there. Love between those two teams.
Since the Blues are playing Boston in the Stanley Cup, can I assume you are a temporary Blues fan? That is a safe assumption. Anything that makes...
No, it's not. I'm a Boston fan.
Oh, well, fuck you then. Anything to make Boston pay, I'm all about. I hate that city. I hate the people in the city. I hate everything.
And I know why.
Yeah.
And you should hate it.
Yeah.
You should hate every sport team in Boston.
I do. I hate everything about Boston.
I feel your pain.
Right. No, I mean, it's a city full of assholes, especially the media. Now, Bill Buckner passed away last weekend. He died of some kind of complications related to dementia. He was vilified by the people. He was abused and run out of that city, and they were absolutely fucking horrible to that guy. And let me tell you, that guy was a stud. I used to watch him when I'd go see my dad, and you know, I was a lieutenant in the Marine Corps at the time, but I was stationed on the East Coast, and when they were in the playoffs in the World Series that year, I'd fly up on the weekends and watch. I used to watch Bill Buckner show up for a 7:30 game at 2:00 in the afternoon with like three newspapers. He'd have the New York Times, you know, one of the Boston papers and something else. And he would sit there with each ankle in a bucket of ice, ice on his back, ice on his shoulder. And he would sit there for an hour or so, and then he would go do some physical therapy to get ready to play. He did that every night. He was a stud. Right. And the sad truth is, you know, he missed the ball in the 1986 World Series. But the brutal reaction of the media in Boston, because they stir that shit up. Right. And the way they treated,
I don't like them either.
The way they treated that guy, they should have the media should have said, hey, leave Billy Buck alone. He's a warrior. He's a stud. He just missed the ball. OK, but they didn't do that. They ripped his ass.
No.
They ripped his ass. They ripped my dad's ass for having him in a game. Blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, anything that could happen to Boston, you know, that causes people their anxiety.
Okay, I'll switch my, I'll go for
St. Louis.
You're right. You're right. I stand corrected.
Thank you.
I'll just say, go Blues.
Go Blues. Go Blues, baby. Yeah.
Go Blues.
I'm all about the Blues. Plus Ryan Duncan got drafted by the Blues. Chris Porter played for the Blues. Jeff Panzer played for the Blues. All North Dakota guys.
TJ Oshie started with the Blues.
He started with the Blues before he went to Stanley Cup.
Yeah, before he went to
Washington.
Washington.
So we got our Blue roots go way back, right?
Yeah.
Like an old
lady. We got a lot of Sioux, baby.
A lot of Sioux blue. So. No, it was like I saw that. I didn't even make any comment about Bill Buckner's passing. But, you know, he was – and I'll tell you what, he could hit. He came up with the Dodgers, and before he injured his legs, man, that guy could run from Napa, California, one of the greatest athletes in the history of Napa High School. Billy Buck, man, he could run like a deer when he came up with the Dodgers. He had that, he had great hair. He had a great mustache. And
he did.
And he could hit. And then he went and played for the Cubs and then the Red Sox. So, yeah, way to, so we got my Boston hate fired up now. Where else are we going to go with this interview? Nowhere.
Let's let it go.
Go Yankees. Yeah, no.
Go Yankees, go Blues.
And they're playing Boston too, so kick their asses in Yankee Stadium. So there you go. Oh. We'll end it on that there, Kim. So first of all.
All right, Mac. My best to Colleen. You have a great weekend. Enjoy the sports.
We will.
And go Yankees.
Go Yankees. Go Blues.
All right, baby.
There you have it.
Thank you.
Yeah, the one and only. P. Kimball Holmes, the Albury Radio head chef, doing his thing. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
That'll do it on a Friday. Little hate session there. Now, let me tell you what's making me happy. Next week, you're going to hear an interview that I did with a young Afghan man who just got his degree in music I can't remember what school in New York City. He's got a scholarship to get his master's in music. And he wrote a letter to thank everybody who served in Iraq and Afghanistan for what they've done for him. And he says that he wishes that he could talk to everybody because he knows there's people that fought there that are suffering. He wishes he could talk to everybody and thank them and in some way, shape, or form ease their pain. And so you'll hear a little blurb from that. Chief Gallagher in the news. The Navy just fucking up another court-martial. That's in the news. And you'll hear an email I got from somebody who just started listening who's living in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Going to join the Marine Corps, found All Marine Radio. I don't know if I should read this email. I will, though. Here's an email. Maybe I won't. Maybe I will. If you've listened to if you listen to the Battlefield Study, the most recent one I did with Tim Galinas, Gunner Type, his daughter wrote me an email. Her name's Melissa. Just listened to the interview with my dad, Gunner Tim Galinas, and wanted to say thank you, as that was the first time I've ever heard any of those things talked about. My husband and I here in Oregon just sat mesmerized by the interview. For me, it all sounded like something I would watch in a movie, and to think my father had lived in those moments and was recounting it so vividly and matter-of-factly was captivating and brought tears to my eyes at times. Best hour and a half ever. Looking forward to more. His very proud daughter, Melissa. Talk about post-traumatic winning, right? You know that, and that's. She said some things though that touch on post-traumatic winning, right? To think my father had lived in those moments and was recounting it so vividly and matter of factly was captivating, brought a tear to my eye. Right? I mean, you don't ever get over it, right? Which is why we need to talk about it. And, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday about that interview, and they said, you know, 18 years old at Quezon and Contien doing Graves registration shit, right? And he came out of that, and he, you know, he's done great in his life. That's some serious rough shit, man. So my thanks to Melissa for the email. And... well, that brings me to this. Go to the All Marine Radio website. Go to the post-traumatic winning tab, right? download the three goals and the eight commandments of post-traumatic winning if you don't have them on your phone already, and forget about it. And I promise you, in the next 30 days, you'll change somebody's life. I promise you. Because they're living with it, and it's vivid. And when you tell them you're never going to get over it, that there's nothing wrong with you, you will ease their pain. I promise you. So, on a Friday, All Marine Radio is over, and have a good weekend. Out.